Well, while Super Tuesday voters will have their pick of four GOP presidential candidates today, for a certain brand of New England conservative, the field is most notable for a conspicuous absence. The absence of the so-called Yankee Republican candidate.
Socially tolerant, fiscally conservatives. Those were the hallmarks of a moderate Republicanism that found a home in New England for more than a century. Reports of its death may be greatly exaggerated, or maybe not. Here's how Maine Republican Senator Olympia Snowe put it when she told the world she'd be bowing out of politics last week.
What I like to call the sensible center has now virtually disappeared in Washington. And the reality is, it's nearly impossible to make progress without partners in the Senate who are willing to reach out from all points on the political spectrum. The reality in America today is that the electorate is increasingly becoming divided into red states and blue states, which elect people representing just one color or the other.
So, is the moderate middle Republican a relic of history, and of New England history in particular? Our guests today say yes. Joining us now from Washington is Sarah Binder. She's a professor of political science at George Washington University and a senior fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution. Professor Binder, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Also with us from Philadelphia is Michael Cohen. He's a fellow at the Century Foundation and author of Romney 68, the GOP Moderate's Last Battle. That was an article that appeared recently in the Boston Globe. Michael Cohen, welcome to you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's great to have you as well. So listeners, before we get too far, I want to throw some questions out to you. When you hear the names of, say, Saltonstall, Cabot Lodge, or even Weld, does that sound like a bygone era to you in New England? Or did the election of Senator Scott Brown prove that moderate Republicanism has not flatlined here? And Republican listeners in particular, what do you make of the tack your party has taken? Is there a place for you in this party? And everyone, is the region here the last bastion for a moderate form of politics, or has the center evaporated for Republicans and Democrats alike? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. So Sarah Binder and Michael Cohen, I wonder if I might just start by having us all just step back in history briefly, deep history, and talk about the foundation of the Republican Party itself in the 1850s, and why is it that it found its earliest homes here in, I guess, in New England and the Northeast in general? Sarah Binder?
Well, reaching way back, of course, here, the Republican Party grew out of Civil War conflict over slavery. And as the Democrats became the party of the South and Lincoln essentially freed the slaves, became the party, the Republicans became the party of the North. I think what's striking is that Democrats and Republicans after the Civil War is pretty intense competition everywhere except the South. By the end of the 19th century, 1890s, we have Republican realignment, so that Republicans are strong almost everywhere across the country except for that solid Democratic South.
And was it that and still so, that same form of what we would call today sort of a moderate Republicanism?
Well, there were all stripes within the Republican Party starting in the 1890s, and it was certainly more conservative at the beginning, and yet so that by 20 years down, so we're talking early 1900s, we had the growth of progressives from within the Republican Party that, in fact, splits that Republican Party to allow Democrats under Woodrow Wilson to gain control in the early 20th century.
And just back in that sort of Civil War and post-Civil War era, I mean, many of the most sort of vociferous, say, abolitionists in the Senate, of course, came from New England. That was sort of a hallmark of the party in its early days.
Absolutely. And that's part of the traditions of the Republican Party and part of what they stood for on these sort of national issues.
Mm. And Michael Cohen, I mean, there is one thing about early Republicanism that seems to have stayed with the party throughout time to this day, and that is also its drive or passion for free market economics. That's not something that's left the party.
No, that's certainly been part of it for a very long time. I think that what's happened now is it's become it's even hard to call it free market economics today since it's sort of – it's even more – I think maybe more crony capitalism. But the sort of – the notion that sort of government doesn't have a role to play in the economy, the notion that government doesn't have a role to play in sort of ameliorating social inequities has become sort of you know, Kant in the Republican Party today, and that hasn't always been the case. If you go back, in the 50s and 60s, certainly there was a wing of the Republican Party that actually believed, no, there was a role for the federal government to play, mm-hmm. a role for state governments to play, and that has certainly disappeared over the last four decades or so.
So I want to talk about sort of that disappearance in just a few minutes, but Sarah Binder, if you can sort of walk us through a little bit more of this history, say, you know, in the turn of the century, the early 1900s, I mean, we have several prominent Northeastern names that sort of typify that so-called moderate GOP. I mean, Calvin Coolidge is an example, very laissez-faire, absolutely. But, I mean, I wonder if in this day and age he would be able to find a place in what is the National Party's sort of focus.
Right. And certainly someone, the leader like Teddy Roosevelt as a Republican president in the early 20th century, certainly someone like him who believed in small government, but also believed, as Michael said, in a role for the government and certainly on issues like the environment, protection of natural resources and so forth. It's very hard to see someone, a figure like TR, have a home in today's Republican Party.
Do you have a sense, I mean, what your thought is as to why over time what we're sort of loosely terming a moderate Republicanism, a Yankee Republicanism, has been a mainstay coming out of New England in particular?
That's a great question. And to some extent, it probably has a bit to do with sort of the independent streak that you hear certainly in a place like Maine and New Hampshire and Vermont, sort of almost an anti-partyism that might appeal to sort of center of the road, nonpartisan legislator. And certainly the Republican tradition there encapsulated, but right by Stafford, Bob Stafford mm-hmm. from Vermont, Jim Jeffords by Vermont, right? Protection of the environment, stewardship of national resources, that's something that was dominant within the Republican Party and probably spoke to the interests of constituents across the upper North, New England.
Mm. Michael Cohen, now if we may, I mean, we've sort of taken a brief run through much of history with Sarah Binder, but you're focusing on basically 1968. And in the year prior to that, though, I mean, there are some names. Sarah Binder mentioned a few of them, but, you know, you get names like, of course, Henry Cabot Lodge Jr., Prescott Bush in Connecticut, Jacob Javits of New York, and, of course, Nelson Rockefeller, governor of New York. So there was this very not just populist, but influential part of the Republican Party that was more centrist than we see today. I mean, was the 60s really its last hurrah?
I mean, I think it was to a large extent. I mean, you really did have a debate in the Republican Party in the mid to late 60s between two very distinct wings, a conservative wing and a moderate wing. And the conservative wing, I mean, for, you know, nominally you sort of think of Barry Goldwater, and the moderate wing you think of Nelson Rockefeller. And, you know, I was writing this weekend about George Romney because he's an interesting character. He was a moderate Republican. He was, you know, could criticize Democrats and unions and big government as well as anybody, but he actually was a bit of a technocrat and a bit of a pragmatist, and he sort of believed that government had a role to play. And he and Goldwater actually, after the 64 debacle in which Goldwater was badly defeated in the presidential election, had a you know, debate back and forth about what was the right direction for the party.
Well, let's talk. I'm sure. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I wanted to, because we keep saying moderate Republican, and I mean,
sure.
In 64, that actually had a very specific meaning. For example, in 1964, at that famed convention, we're going to hear a little tape of it in a second, but both Nelson Rockefeller and George Romney, you know, they floated several amendments to the GOP platform that when you hear them today don't sound as if, you know, they may have come from the heart of the GOP. I mean, at the time, they were floating amendments such as anti-extremism, the desirability of the civil rights law, nuclear control, and the idea that overall that these were things that they wanted to include as mainstays of the party. I mean, this is what we're talking about, right, when we're talking about moderate Republicanism.
Absolutely. And I think it's a very different view also about the role of government. I think this is a crucial distinction between the two wings of the party. And it's important to remember, you know, think about Goldwater's famous convention speech in 1964 where he basically said extremism and the pursuit of liberty is no vice. He also said was very critical of moderation, of moderates. And he basically in that speech was saying, you know, to the moderates, you know, sort of go jump in a lake. We don't want you in this party. If you're not willing to sort of buy into to sort of our vision of the Republican Party, we don't want you in the party. And that was a disastrous speech. And Romney actually, in fact, said he wouldn't endorse Goldwater's nomination. A lot of moderates sat out the election because they were embarrassed by Goldwater and didn't want to support him. So that was a crucial, really, break between these two sides. And again, the difference really was that you had these sort of technocratic governors like Romney in Michigan and Rockefeller in New York and other folks who were sort of forced to actually, you know, govern. They couldn't just govern by ideology as Goldwater sort of preferred. Mm-hmm. And that became the crucial, I think, divide between the two sides of the party.
Well, let's listen to a little bit from that era. We've got some tape here from the 1964 Republican National Convention. And I mean, for people who've either seen the tape or remember it, it was a very raucous convention because Nelson Rockefeller, for example, stood beneath an enormous banner that had an image of Abraham Lincoln on it. He was there to present those aspects to the GOP platform, which we just talked about. And he says he really wanted to repudiate the efforts of extremists in the party. I mean, he said a radical and well-financed minority, wholly alien to the sound and honest republicanism that has kept this party abreast of human needs in a changing world. Let's hear what else he said.
These extremists feed on fear, hate, and terror. They encourage disunity. You control the audience, and I'll make my 5 minutes. These are people who have nothing in common with Americanism. The Republican Party must repudiate these people.
So as you can hear, Nelson Rockefeller was practically booed off stage, and the crowd was chanting, "We want Barry," as in Barry Goldwater. And then, of course, later in the convention, when Goldwater accepted the Republican nomination, Mr. Conservative, as he was called by many, including Richard Nixon, who introduced him, said this.
I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
So that was 1964. Michael Cohen, you write in your article, Romney 68, that battle continued between George Romney and Barry Goldwater, even in through letters that George Romney wrote to Barry Goldwater.
Yes, they had a fascinating exchange, a private exchange that became leaked to the press. In which Romney basically made the argument that the party could not just be the sort of rump party that just spoke for the conservative wing of the party, but it had to be sort of a big tent and really bring in as many people as possible. And it's important to remember also a big issue that came up at this point was civil rights. And you know, as Sarah mentioned, Republicans were the party of civil rights for a long time. And they had for a long time also relied on support of African-American voters. And the big break in 64 was that, you know, Goldwater had come out against the civil rights bill. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge divide in the party. And this was a big issue for Romney, too, because Romney was a very strong voice on civil rights. I mean, he would go to the South and talk about and dismiss states' rights and dismiss segregation, which was, you know, and again, it's not fair to say Goldwater was a racist. Goldwater played on sort of racist fears, but this conservative wing of the party was very opposed to civil rights legislation and very much seeing, you know, possible political success in playing off of the growing white backlash in the country at the time. And Romney was opposed to this.
And famously, if I remember, Lyndon Johnson, when he signed the Civil Rights Act, said that he had basically signed away the South for the Democrats. Sarah Binder, that's on the presidential level. In the 60s, are we seeing the same strife and drift from moderate Republicanism at the congressional level, or does that come later?
Well, it's certainly conservative movement to the Republican Party first occurs at the presidential level in 64, and then followed by voting for Nixon 68, 72, and then having the option of voting for Reagan in the 1980s. At the congressional level, the Southern Democrats retained their seats. They were hardcore conservatives, and it was a good 20 years, right, into the early 1980s, and if not the late 1980s, before Republicans gain entry really at the congressional level in order to be elected. Now, part of that, of course, is what's going on within the Democratic Party, mm-hmm. which is that as blacks become registered to vote after the Voting Rights Act in 65, the nature of the Democratic constituency changes. So those constituents become more liberal and over time are much less willing to vote for these conservative Democrats. So some conservative Democrats retire. Slowly they get replaced by both either moderate Democrats, or more likely by the emergence of a conservative Republican wing to the Congressional Party.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about moderate Republicanism, a form of Republicanism that has long found a home here in New England, and whether or not that brand or that part of the GOP is a vanishing breed. We're at 800-423-8255. Let's take a couple calls here. John is calling from Hudson, New Hampshire. You're on the air, John.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm a moderate Republican, and I've been that way for the longest time. But see, all the candidates right now, they're so religiously to the right, it scares the heck out of me. And that's got nothing to do with the politics. I want them to run the country, not my life. And to me, that shows that they can't compromise. And I don't know if any of those people are married, but boy, you should have to learn how to compromise in life. So they're just pushing me to go more towards Obama. I don't want to see him there. I sure as heck don't want these nuts in there.
So, John, are you saying that you see the only way out for you as a moderate Republican is the Democrats? There's no other way?
With all the candidates that are up there right now, yes. I mean, I voted for John McCain because I liked him. He was, level-headed. He, granted, he likes to go to war, but still, he had some kind of compromise and some kind of a common sense. Mm. These guys, they just seem to... I don't know. They just scare me.
John, thank you so much for your call. Let's take another one from Cohasset, where Nancy's calling. You're on the air, Nancy.
Thank you for taking my call. I have to say that although my remarks when I telephoned in were remembering our family friendship with Governor Saltonstall and others of the moderate Republicans whom we knew. I knew Bill Weld, and that was my direction. Let me say that I thoroughly agree with John's comments just previous. Mm-hmm. And the reason I called in was, following on his comments, I feel, for me personally, as an 82-year-old, feminist, a former, when the Republican Party allowed moderate Republicans, that's what I was. I am now an independent. The retiring of Olympia Snow is a personal tragedy for me.
Nancy, thank you so much for your call. I'm sorry to cut you off there, but I can hear how you feel like the party has left you behind, and I really appreciate you sharing your thoughts. And I wanted to actually use your thoughts, Nancy, to sort of pivot into where this leaves Republicans in New England today. Michael Cohen and Sarah Binder, I want to play a little tape about that, because it seems like amongst the GOP in general, there's a sense of triumphalism over the demise of the moderate middle. I mean, here's Ann Coulter speaking last month on Fox News about just that.
You know, by and large, I think conservatives should be celebrating now. We've killed off the Rockefeller Republicans. In 2008, we had one candidate running who was pro-abortion. We had one candidate who opposed Clinton's impeachment. We had one candidate who wanted to shut down Guantanamo, voted against Bush's tax cuts, called waterboarding torture. Oh, and that's the one we ran.
Right.
We have killed off Rockefeller Republicans. Basically, all of them have conservative positions now.
And Ann Coulter went on to say that Governor Mitt Romney was the strongest and most conservative of them. But Michael Cohen, I mean, Mitt Romney was, of course, governor of Massachusetts. So this is where I get a little confused when someone like Ann Coulter says that. So is Mitt Romney essentially a Yankee Republican who's running as an arch conservative? But what's really in his heart?
I can't look into his heart to think of what he really believes. But I can just look at the way he's running for president. And he's running as far to the right as he possibly can run on a host of issues. He's running in a way against his singular accomplishment as governor of Massachusetts, which was health care reform. He's run to the far right on immigration. He's running as basically a neocon on foreign policy. He's running as far right as he possibly can. And you know, to me, what this says, and this is a lot about Olympia Snow also, you have moderates to some extent still in the Republican Party, but what they do now is they try to disprove the notion that they are moderates. They want to run as far as possible away from that particular image. In the case of Snow, she wants to maintain the moderate image so she can get elected in Maine, but in reality she really kind of governed, or as a senator she was more of a conservative, and she sided with the Republican Party on a number of issues. Mm. And so someone like Romney, I mean, he's obviously come to the realization that he can't win as the Massachusetts moderate. He has to run as a far-right conservative. And to me, that is the ultimate demise of the moderate wing of the party, that you don't really have a debate within the Republican Party about, you know, between a moderate and conservative wing. You have a debate in the Democratic Party between centrist and liberal wings. It doesn't exist. You know,
I don't mean to interrupt you, but it got me thinking, Sarah Binder. We're hearing Michael Cohen and even our callers saying it's the party has morphed. But maybe voters themselves haven't, because you were mentioning a little earlier these names, you know, in the 70s and especially 80s of folks that were elected to Congress from the Northeast. I mean, you mentioned Robert Stafford from Vermont, Warren Rudman from New Hampshire, Bill Cohen, Maine, John Chafee in Rhode Island, Chris Shays in Connecticut. I mean, these are people who actually had quite an influence in Congress, at least through the 80s. There were voters to put them there in office. Do those voters still exist?
Well, it's certainly well documented that at the elite level, right, at the elected level, legislative parties have moved Democrats to the far left, Republicans to the far right. There's quite a bit more sort of political science disagreement about the exact nature of the sort of ideological makeup of the electorate as opposed to at the elite level. And certainly your callers reflect some of that moderate middle. Some folks believe that really Americans are really, we think of it as sort of that bell-shaped curve, that most Americans are moderate, relatively few are intense liberals, relatively few are intense conservatives. But if the best of the data probably show that even that is changing, that even at the level of sort of voters themselves and non-voters, we see a bit more sort of a bipolar movement, more growth of more liberals and certainly growth of more conservatives. But there are still moderates left voters, but they don't often have a choice to vote someone in the center, right? Mm-hmm. Frequently their choices are themselves on the left and the right.
Sarah Binder is a professor of political science at George Washington University and a senior fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution. Sarah Binder, thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
And Michael Cohen, fellow at the Century Foundation and author of Romney 68, The GOP Moderate's Last Battle, was an article that appeared recently in the Boston Globe. Thank you as well for your time.
Thank you. My pleasure.
This parting thought from Kathy, who writes on RadioBoston.org, moderates and conservatives are not welcome in the Republican Party of today. Most of those New England moderates of yore would have had a hard time getting a hearing in the Democratic Party. I believe New England Yankee Republicans would be too liberal. Continue the conversation, everybody, online at RadioBoston.org. And coming up in a little bit, your feedback on some of our other shows. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.